Hello, I'm Gareth Westwood, Head of Global Intelligence, and this is Sibylline Insights. A warm welcome back, this time being filmed from Sibylline Studios on Friday the 9th of June 2023. Just over 5 years ago, an administration led by Donald Trump pulled out of the JCPOA, an imperfect but significant piece of multilateral diplomacy that sought to stymie Iran's road to a nuclear weapon. In May, we saw Iran test a missile that could reportedly reach a 2,000 kilometer range. And only recently, last week, as we're recording, we saw the new Fateh Mach 14 hypersonic ballistic missile tested again by the IRGC. Now, in the context of this and Iran's nuclear program today, I'm delighted to be joined by subject matter expert, Valeriy Skuto. Valeriy, thank you very much for joining us. And I know that you've hot-tailed it here from another studio just across London where you did another media appearance. So we're very grateful for you being here today. So we have these two missile tests. We have the growing suspicion about Iran's nuclear program, especially since the breakdown of the JCPOA. What is the significance of the most recent missile tests?
It's definitely quite interesting in terms of both timing and the capabilities Iran has showcased with the test and the recent unveiling. Of course, in terms of operational capabilities, the test is more significant than the unveiling of the hypersonic Fateh, because we do know that, sort of historically speaking, Iran has unveiled capabilities that have never been tested, and there have been instances of quite literally photoshopping stealth fighter jets.
So this Mach 14 missile, just to be clear, hasn't actually been tested yet. It's just been unveiled quite publicly.
Iran has a sort of Iranian sort of media and the government has said that it has tested the weapon, but we don't have any sort of visuals on the actual testing. It's been something that Iran has discussed in terms of development. Last November, it was already rumored that they had developed an indigenous hypersonic ballistic missile. So this is just to say, not that this weapon does not work or is not real, but it's always good to be on the cautionary side when seeing these types of videos and these very flashy presentations. That being said, I think the push and sort of the continued development of the Iranian missile program is of concern and showcases how this lends to sort of the Iranian nuclear program and the possibility of developing a nuclear weapon.
I mean, just circling back to this Fateh Mach 14, because I'm intrigued. So this could potentially defeat air defense, Western air defense?
Yes, Iranian sort of authorities have said that they could pierce through all air defense systems. There is a clear reference to the Israeli Iron Dome system. They haven't made sort of an explicit threat to Israel, though back in November, when discussing sort of the possibility and of unveiling such a weapon, they did mention that it could reach sort of Tel Aviv in 400 seconds.
Right, so before we get into the nuclear part of this, I note that just before they tested the missile in May, which we believe was an actual test, we had some rhetoric from Israel, not discounting an attack on Iran. Is that correct? And how does that play into the, you know, this kind of tit-for-tat rhetoric now from Iran vis-a-vis these missile unveilings and tests?
This, of course, happens, as we've said before, and on this uptick of this Israel-Iran shadow conflict. I think there is a quite a real concern within Israel and sort of defense, Israeli defense authorities of sort of how concrete the Iranian threat has become, which has led sort of officials to raise the question of attacking again sort of the Iranian nuclear program, carrying out sabotage attacks under this cloak of plausible deniability, which has receded over the past months.
So, okay, so let's go back onto the quite pertinent question of the nuclear program then, and where these missiles fit in. Has there been explicit, you know, reference to the nuclear program, you know, in the context of these tests, i.e. are these seen as delivery mechanisms for, a nuclear device?
So statements haven't been explicit, but of course, the whole nature of the missile program is sort of in part to develop technological capabilities and military capabilities that would allow sort of Iran to actually have an operational nuclear weapon, because sort of the main benefit of hypersonic missiles is their maneuverability, which is something that lends well to sort of them deploying a nuclear weapon. That being said, the two things have not been necessarily linked together, but the sort of historically speaking, the missile program has been, you know, part of the R&D also for Iran's nuclear program.
So is the uranium enrichment then and the missile program concurrent, or are we to take away from this that their uranium enrichment is nearly there and they're now on to delivery? How do those two things work together?
I think they do run in parallel and there are crossovers, but I wouldn't necessarily say that the recent testing implies that Iran is closer to actually having a nuclear weapon. Because we all know that enriched uranium and reaching weapon-grade uranium is only a first step to actually having a functioning nuclear weapon itself. And Iran, there is still quite a gap to bridge in terms of Iranian technology on that front. That being said, it is all part of the wider deterrence discourse that you were mentioning before. And it does mean that the IRGC and the R&D development in Iran on defense and security is advancing. I think the most concerning aspect is that Iran is now moving to improving the systems it has. So rather than going into sort of a question of range, it is looking at a question of precision and maneuverability of these sort of weapons and defense systems.
Yeah, so it seems then that Iran is pretty confident, unless, of course, this is all bluster and echoes of, you know, North Korea, which can't be discounted. It seems that Iran are confident then that their enrichment program is underway and it's ticking along just fine, and they have the range, and now they're just kind of refining the delivery mechanism. Quite alarming, really. I mean, has Israel, to start with, reacted not only diplomatically? Have we seen, for example, attacks against Iranian entities elsewhere in the region where they're deployed, for example, IRGC in Syria, for example?
Not as of yet, but it's likely that we're going to see sort of for retaliatory attacks or anyways action in Syria. There's been quite a significant uptick in Israeli-led strikes in Syria, and Iran has expanded its military foothold, sort of creating and facilitating the movement of weapons within the country, as well as establishing bases. So that's something that Israel is looking at quite closely. That being said, since 2017, Israel has developed additional sort of air defense systems. So we all know the capabilities of the Iron Dome, but it has also sort of improved and increased the capabilities of its Arrow 4 system, which would be the sort of the primary system targeting sort of hypersonic ballistic missiles. They do seem like a, you know, one-stop shop for missiles, the best weapon out there. But there are certain countermeasures that would prevent a successful strike. Russia has used them in combat before, so they are not a perfect weapon. It is definitely of concern to have sort of, it does add to Iran's quite broad arsenal.
And severely curtails the time for reaction warning, Mach 14, across a relatively short space.
I think what still has to be defined, obviously because we haven't seen the testing of the weapon, is how long it can actually sustain that speed. Because some ballistic missiles do technically have hypersonic speed already, sort of talking about very broad definitions of what hypersonic means. So we don't know, therefore, how long it can sustain, and therefore if it does have the hypersonic glide, that would definitely be problematic.
Might have reached above Mach 10 at some point in its flight. And is there any indication that entities other than Israel would be the target for this, or is this rhetoric and these tests, and indeed the nuclear program, specifically targeted at Israel?
I think in broad terms, it is targeted at Israel. I don't think this represents a broader threat to the Western world. Iran is in quite a very particular sort of regional momentum, diplomatic momentum. And while sort of voices and rumors have been disproven on a potential sort of interim nuclear deal, it wouldn't be sort of strategically advantageous to threaten right now the US or European partners. I think this has to be sort of narrowly seen in sort of regional developments. Also because during the unveiling, there was no specific threat. It was just, you know, part of the wider discourse of Iran maintaining a technological edge within the region. Similarly, you know, the rapprochement with Saudi Arabia is ongoing and is progressing. It's also something that Saudi Arabia is looking at closely, sort of not losing that military advantage. And sort of Iran has all the interest in not representing a bigger threat.
Of course, that brings a degree of complexity into the whole situation, which we didn't have maybe this time last year. And obviously we've seen Saudi calls for assistance in establishing its own civilian nuclear program, which may or may not be seen in the context of this relationship in Iran's nuclear efforts. Maybe a podcast for another day. But moving outside of Israel then, given that this is a very regional threat, albeit a nuclear one, have we seen the sort of reaction from the US that we would have seen under, you know, in years gone by? Or has the situation, the democratic situation in Israel, altered that support? How do we see that security guarantee and as such the reaction to these latest tests from the US side?
I would say the reaction has been more muted. The Biden administration is quite focused on its dialogue with Saudi Arabia, which sort of might have informed less antagonistic rhetoric or simply not commenting in the same terms. They have expressed concern, but nothing beyond that. And I do think that the current sort of push by the administration to have a revival potentially of the nuclear deal, but more importantly of Israel-Saudi peace deal, is something that is influencing sort of statements. The Biden administration seems quite keen on keeping cards close at the moment. It is a very sort of sensitive time. Biden has limited bandwidth before he starts campaigning for sort of the presidential elections. And it is easier to sort of negotiate via back channels and closed doors rather than utilizing sort of big media headlines.
So can we see this muted reaction then just as real politic, or do the Americans know something we don't? Do the various governments looking at this actually know that some of this is kind of paper tiger territory? You know, they've not tested the hypersonic Mach 14 missile. And actually, their muted reaction could be seen in a positive light as to, you know, Iran's actual capability, as is known by these various administrations and governments.
I think it's likely to be a bit of both. The fact that both U.S. and Iranian authorities have sort of disproven these rumors on an interim deal might actually signal that there is something moving in the water. That the JCPOA is, as we know it is, might be dead. But that being said, something can still come out of it. So I think it's in part of that. But also, you know, before the recent unveiling, the U.S. issued new sanctions. So I think it's a diversifying sort of its efforts and how it responds to Iran. But it has much more to do, I think, with Saudi Arabia than Iran itself.
Interesting. And just to cover off the various players involved here, obviously the JCPOA wasn't just US and Iran. What have we seen from European entities? What have we seen from Russia and China, although those parties might be embroiled elsewhere at the moment? But what have we seen wider in terms of reaction to these latest tests and unveilings?
I think Russia has been less involved, and the ongoing Ukrainian spring offensive might be the culprit of a slightly diminished interest or involvement. China seems has always been keen on, I think, at least a revival of talks. I think it's in China's interest, economically speaking, to have parties talk to each other. And that's sort of why it was a perfect broker for the Iran-Saudi rapprochement. Europeans have always been quite optimist, and they do have always supported the JCPOA and its revival, mainly because of how the EU conducts foreign policy, and have been sort of the primary interlocutor as well with the US. But at the moment, they have focused their interests a little bit more on the Mediterranean and North African shores in terms of migration.
Okay, I mean, I think the final question then for me is, the Iranian nuclear program going forward. We see these bumps in the road, often, I think, inspired, catalyzed by political concerns, rather than a genuine reflection of the pipeline of the capability pipeline. Certainly, that's how I see it. However, given the unlikely possibility that Israel is going to be less hawkish here. I think Israel will likely continue to be hawkish, certainly in the current administration. Do we see this escalating more? Do we see more tit for tat, more unveilings, more tests, perhaps strikes, as you said earlier, early response in Syria by Israel? Where do we see this going in the next 6 months? Is it heading in a dangerous direction? I think, our listeners and viewers would want to know.
I think if we're considering, I don't consider personally sort of assassination and sabotage necessarily an escalation. So I think the status quo will progress, and we will see sort of potential for these actions, and they will be destabilizing. But I think we are going to see much more of the past months than a significant sort of U-turn that would result in a quite significant deterioration of the security environment, regionally speaking.
So an unstable situation that will endure, but not necessarily escalate in the near term.
Precisely.
Well, Valeria, it's been great for you to be on the pod. Thank you so much for hot-tailing it over here from your previous engagement. And it's wonderful to see you again at Sibylline Studios.
Thank you for having me.
So that's it for another episode of Sibylline Insights. Please remember to like and subscribe however you have seen or heard this podcast. And we do look forward to welcoming you to the next edition.